You probably weren't surprised to learn this week that New Jersey ranked 46. What am I talking about? Number 46. All right, let me help you out. Number 50, which is a list of 50, 50 being the worst. The worst was New York.
Most roads.
Most roads, no. Taxes. Wow, that could be true. They may correlate, and actually in a way that we may talk about another time. Anybody else? Friendly people or not so. That's right. It was a list of friendly people. It's amazing. Number 46. Now, of course, with all these surveys, this particular survey I'm referring to, I can give you the link if you like. It's just called Big Event Travel. They surveyed 1.5 million people, you know, for the survey results. Now, all that means is 1.5 million people had a shared view. Statistically, absolutely irrelevant. But it was a lot of people, and so in the aggregate, New Jersey ranked 46. Now, we know that that totally isn't true here. And if we gave you a survey, how friendly do you think New Jersey? Well, maybe it would be 35, maybe. I don't know. But, of course, your mileage may vary. The fact that New Jersey's ranked 46 out of 50 may bring sadness to some, particularly to realtors who are trying to sell homes here. But it's possible, of course, that there are exceptions to every survey, and you are the one that makes a difference by your behaviors, whether or not somebody says you're friendly or not. But curiously, do you know what number one was? The most friendly state in the nation?
Hawaii
was up there. I think it was number 3 or 4. I don't remember which one. Someone? Anybody else? Virginia? I don't think they did so high. Anything around the D.C. area was pretty low. I'm from Maryland. It hurt my feelings, huh?
Minnesota.
I'm sorry.
Minnesota.
Yes, Minnesota. Minnesota was number one. Friendliest state in the nation. Now, one of the ones that was number 49 is curious. Because, the survey has, sometimes they have comments, you know, like, why, how'd they arrive at 35? Well, why not 25? Well, here's something they observed in the state, and that's why the number was ranked in a certain way. And so the number 49, right after New York, and there's no argument about New York being the most unfriendly state in the nation, right? So never mind that. Moving on. But number 49 was a bit of a surprise, perhaps, to some. It was Arkansas. Arkansas? Wait, when's the last time you even thought about Arkansas? I hope, anybody here from Arkansas? Because we love Arkansas. Anybody? But first of all, they have the word Kansas in the name, and Kansas I associate with the Wizard of Oz and Dorothy and stuff, so Arkansas, you know, kind of sounds neat. But in Arkansas, let me see if I wrote this down. In Arkansas, they boast some of the friendliest people, the survey results said, some of the friendliest people you'll find anywhere in the country. But their friendliness only extends to locals. To visitors and strangers in the state, they are not welcomed at all. And if you weren't born there, you're not welcome there. Wow, that's heavy. Holy moly. I used to think that way when I went to school in Boston. I thought that was like the most unfriendliest place in the world because you'd say, you know, I've lived here, you know, a neighbor may say, I've lived here 35 years. Yeah, well, my family was born here 200 years ago. It was a rank file order about the longest person, the genealogy could be the longest, means you're the most highly valued. Well, Jesus went into this kind of a survey going on, and it was when he was visiting on the Sabbath day, Saturday back then, the Sabbath, the day of rest, in this cycle that God created for nurture and creativity, for labor. And then there's a time for not labor, for relaxation, for re-creation, creation and then re-creation. And so Jesus was at a place he was invited to a luncheon. And Jesus did some neat things there. Our text today didn't refer to it, but he healed somebody. What we would say the diagnosis was an edema. It's called dropsy back then. And so he did meet somebody who had an illness and healed them. He talked to a whole bunch of people, did lots of amazing things. But as far as the luncheon was concerned, he observed that the host gave the very best seats to people he thought were more highly valued than him. And which is fine, except what happens when somebody comes in, Jesus then remarks, and what happens if you've now been seated with the high and the mighty, and then all of a sudden the host of the party says, oh, but wait, well, here's John coming in. Well, he's even more valuable than him. And the person comes to you and taps you on the shoulder and says, I'm sorry, you have to go sit in the back. Now, in a church, we'd have to inverse this geographically, physically, because we know that the most highly valued seats are actually in the back, because those are the ones people sit in first. I have no idea. We've observed this generations going back. I'm sure it was true 300 years ago in this very place. But those in the front received the special honor. And I think that's kind of cool. But back in Jesus' day, it was not unlike, I suppose, over the years it's changed, the idea that your role in society dictates your value to society, the degree of dignity and respect you're afforded. So those in the old days, so those in royalty, those in the clergy, those in the military, were all afforded the highest honor. They had the power, and in that society, they wielded the most authority and responsibility, and they were deferred a great deal of respect. But fortunately, as times have changed, we realize that it's by our behaviors and actions that really ought to warrant the degree of respect. But everybody deserves respect and honor, regardless of their station in life. But in Jesus' day, to telescope back into Jesus' time, they were really into status and social structure. So Jesus, remember the town he was born in? Jesus of Nazareth, yes. You know, Nazareth was that place that nobody wanted to have on their genealogy. And in fact, you'd go out of your way to say, where are you born? Jerusalem. You know, you just kind of pick the next biggest, nicer city. Because Nazareth was not a place where good things came. In fact, when Jesus was introduced from Nathanael, when Philip introduced Jesus to his brother Nathanael, Nathanael replies back, why would I want to meet him? He's from Nazareth. Nothing good can come from there, he said. And boy, was his perspective changed. Because Jesus was from Nazareth. He wasn't born in Jerusalem. He wasn't born in the crib room of the king. He was the son of the great king. He was the king, Jesus. But he was born in a lowly place outside of town, a town nobody wanted to go to. In fact, they probably had a reputation like New York. It was a very unfriendly place. And it was the place that you would never want to associate with. Jesus affirmed that name, and eventually it became his nickname. Jesus of Nazareth. Jesus of Nazareth. And you can imagine how the people from Nazareth must have really kind of liked that. Because every other time they heard their name mentioned, it was like, oh, God, there we go again. It's like the jokes about the Turnpike in New Jersey or the Garden State. You know, what exit do you live on? Melissa, in some of her presentations, some out of state, she would make some New Jersey references and jokes. And everybody resonates in the room. They totally get it. And Melissa is our great ambassador from New Jersey who sets them all straight. But there are certain reputations that states can have, that neighborhoods can have, that people can have. Some of our political conversation. You know, Democrats often don't think very highly of Republicans. I don't get it. Or vice versa. And so we then meet. It's like, oh, you're a Democrat? All of a sudden, a positive view of a person or a family, all of a sudden, in our mind, we may treat them nice, but we'll say, oh, whoa, that's jarring. I had no idea that they were a Democrat. And maybe if we're thinking, we'll pause and say, oh my gosh, they're a Democrat. How could they be so nice and they're a Democrat? That doesn't make any sense at all to me. Or maybe just the opposite. That maybe someone of a certain political party or maybe a certain group. It may be a certain religion. What? You're Lutheran? How could you possibly be Lutheran and be so nice? I never met a Lutheran I liked. And so we have to keep adjusting our inputs because when new information comes in, it doesn't mean we accept it blindly. We have to beware of fake news and we have to beware of things that can throw us off kilter, that can damage us and harm us with information. But when we receive information, we should thoughtfully say, huh, now this is what I've come to believe. But if we could just suspend our biases just for a moment and just open ourselves up to that new information, just again, just for a moment, and say, how could I reconcile this new information with what I know to be true? And maybe you'll say, well, it doesn't reconcile. I totally understand that. This is my view of that, and that's that. Fine. But at least for a moment, if we suspend our biases, and like when you hear something from a neighbor recommending a certain store, and you've been there 5, 6, 7, 12 dozen times, you hate that place. They're too expensive. And then somebody says, hey, you know what? I went over there and I got this and that and this, and the prices were really great. Oh, no, that's always expensive. And so that's a bias. It's not a bad thing, but it's a bias. It's a predisposed to a certain point of view or attitude, maybe even a behavior. You drive by and turn the other way if you could because you don't like that store. Too expensive. But then if we were open to our neighbor and just for a moment say, well, I guess they could change. I guess they could have a new manager. I guess they could have been bought out by someone else that kind of had a different pricing structure in the store. I guess maybe that was a few years back. You know, it was about 1979 that I remember they were really super expensive. And, of course, I wasn't out working yet. I had just gotten out of school. And maybe it was just they were too expensive for me at the time. But we just suspend our bias just for a moment. Really, the prices are pretty good, huh? And if we're compelled, if like the neighbor we trust, if their opinion means something to us, we might say, well, gosh, I guess I should go by. I guess I should check it out. And maybe weeks later, you're now celebrating the greatness of this particular store, and you're telling people, and their prices are great. Because we've gone from one place of belief to another, slightly modified. Well, in that case, totally modified. But this happens to us all the time. But we only learn and grow when we check our behaviors and our attitudes and our biases, and we allow ourselves just for a moment to be open to something new. But Jesus also shared in this story something very important about hospitality. You know, we think of humility as being a virtue, right? There could be no one here that would think humility is a bad thing. In fact, it's such a virtue in our way of thinking as modern people that humility is something that we seek to experience in our life. It's not something that can be bought. It's not something you can just acquire or say, hey, now I'm humble. Oh, boy, that's a relief. And then move on to another task of life. But it's actually a set of behaviors and attitudes where we recognize our place, and like Paul says in the letter to the Corinthians, you defer to others a measure of grace greater than yourself. And in Thessalonians, Galatians, you don't think of yourself greater than others. You instead consider others better than you. And when feedback comes in, you receive the feedback, and even if you would disagree with something on the face of it, you just set aside, again, you suspend your previously conceived idea just for a moment. You're not giving it away, but just for a moment, and you're able to embrace something new. And for Jesus, it was elevating humility. Did you know that in Jesus' time, and for about 100 years after, humility was a vice? And that if you acted with humility, that was just frowned upon exceedingly. That the only people that got ahead in Jesus' day were the ones who acted with very unhumble-like actions. That in Jesus' day, when he's saying, and you should be humble, put others before you, even to us today, it's like, oh, wow, that story again. I guess I got to work harder. Because we all struggle. I struggle with humility. But back in Jesus' day when he said that, I mean, it could be challenging to us today, but back then, and Jesus just might as well just said the most outrageous thing we could imagine. And you should be humble, thinking of others more than yourself. What? What are you saying? And he uses this example of a luncheon. Because to be truly hospitable, to be truly welcoming, in Jesus' day, that term, it wasn't just to be hospitable to friends and family. In fact, in Jesus' day, you don't use the word hospitality for people that you know. Hospitality always refers, and maybe the word today in its purest form, it always extends to those we don't know. And again, back in Jesus' day, this was shocking. That there were no cool, cute pineapples, you know, hanging up on the mantle, just, oh, we're so welcoming. It's really great. We're a welcoming family. But no, it was always, we were only hospitable when we extended that out, like the Good Samaritan who cared for someone he didn't know, who set a tab up at the local hospital so that he could be cared for until he returned on his return trip. So hospitality is the measure, and it's something that God has extended to everybody on the planet. God has extended, said, for God so loved the world. You know, for us, you know, we're alien to God. Our behaviors aren't so much like God even on our better days. For God to say, I love you and I've set you in this garden of a planet to care for it and to tend it and to produce good things, to take care of the world and take care of each other. And so God has placed us here and this is God's home. And he's invited us in. This church is God's home and he's invited us in. Your home is God. God gave that to you. Your home is a place that can be of hospitality. And for us, although we're welcoming and friendly, the real test of hospitality is to what degree do we really go out, as Jesus said, to invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the hungry, the disadvantaged, those who don't quite fit in our regular orbit. And I was thinking about that. And in Jesus' day, remember, those who were in those categories, and those titles are just awful even to use now, but the people that don't have resources to be as mobile or as active or as healthy, to hear as good, to walk around as well as you and I might, that these categories in Jesus' day, these people receive nothing. And Jesus is saying, invite them to your party. And I thought, well, I wonder what he said to, let's say, a group of people who didn't have a lot of money. Let's say the people who we might call poor. I wonder if Jesus was giving his little talk to the poor. And he wanted to share it's important to be humble. And it's important to take care of people, not just your family and friends. What would he say? And I kind of think he'd say to the poor, don't forget the crippled. And don't forget the rich. When you have your party, and it's all the people who have a lot of physical ailments in your group, why don't you extend an invitation to people who can see and people who can walk and people who are full? And maybe in that relationship, different power dynamics would result. Because the message of hope and humility isn't just for people who have resources, it's for everybody. And I think Jesus invites the world just to look differently at the resources that we have. So today, tomorrow, into this week, we'll celebrate with hot dogs and hamburgers. You know, we have a great picnic lined up on September 29th. There's 5 Sundays in September. So that also means for worship on September 29th, come with your favorite hymns. And we'll sing a few of those during our worship service. It's a 5th Sunday. But in addition to being a 5th Sunday, September 29th, of course, is the 5th Sunday of the month. It's the very last Sunday that precedes the fall. And we have our annual picnic, for example. I remember when I first arrived here just a few years ago, and it was just shortly after that we had this picnic. And it became a welcome party, you know, for me and for Melissa. It was great. You know, we weren't at the one before that. But once we arrived, and now we're new on the scene, we were welcomed with open arms, and it was really great. Of course, my favorites are the hamburgers that the West Cape May Fire Company grills for us live out there on the back of the manse lawn. Thank you, Chuck, and all your good friends over there. And this year will be no exception. But in addition to being a wonderful congregational gathering, we can layer on top of that already great event a simple little addition that won't change anything we do over there. It won't change our purchasing. It won't change our setup. It won't change the hot dogs or the hamburgers. I mean, it won't change any of that good stuff. And we simply extend a welcome to strangers and other neighbors that we may not know. That we make it a community picnic. Because every single event we do here at Cold Spring Church are not isolated events. You know, great dinners. We had a great recital a few weeks back. We have guests that come in to perform. Well, we have a wonderful Christmas bazaar and Presbyterian Women Christmas bazaar and all of that coming up in the fall. We have Advent coming and Christmas with all the special services. We just got a fall that's just wonderful. You can't come to everything, but please do try to find some things to participate in. But all of these are not isolated events. Instead, let's think of them, like the picnic, as something that we stack one on top of the other, like slices of pineapple. That we have this great pineapple of welcoming in our mission. Our church was created here and put here, established here, to be a welcome sign of God's love. And if we could just think of all these events being stacked one on top of the other, then each event can build on the previous event. You know, the session who receives new members, we have another two members joining very soon, that the session gets the chance to actually sort of interview our potential new members. To have them share about their faith in Jesus, to have them share about what brought them here, to share about their hopes and dreams of participating as a member of this church. And we'll have another new member class starting in the fall, in October. But these people who share around the table, I wish you could hear the things that they share. And so many of them have gotten involved because they've come to a dinner, or they've come to a special once-in-a-lifetime Christmas Eve service that a neighbor invited them to. They had no reason to come before. The cemetery is another one that we stack. It's another kind of an event. We enter families' lives at a time of grief and suffering, and yet this is a welcoming place. Every day I see people walking around our cemetery. And so these kinds of things, having a funeral or having a repast for a family that's suffering the loss of a loved one, that these are all events that we stack one on top of the other so that maybe eventually, by participating in a picnic, maybe then coming to worship, maybe coming only once, maybe a couple weeks later they come back. And then they come back for something else. And then they come to a dinner. And then maybe they get involved with you and me in different ways. And these different cascading, stacking events can lead someone to be part of God's family in this place. This is the beauty of the events that we have. I call these events farming events. These are events that are meant to plant seeds. Seeds of love, seeds of hope. And it's only, though, hospitality when we extend our invitation to those outside of our regular orbit of friends and family. So do bring friends and family. Do invite those who haven't been involved in a little while. You invite them, whether they've been involved here for many years or just a few. But let's have a special emphasis this year on all of our events coming toward the end of as the year progresses, that we are a hospitable church. The pineapple was a symbol of hospitality. Well, when I think of Cold Spring Church, I think of hospitality. And let's build on what we already have. So let's stack it up this fall. That God's authentic hospitality begins with humility and being open to what God is doing. As we read in the Hebrews reading today, let mutual love continue. That's the love we have for one another. Let mutual love continue, but do not neglect to show hospitality. Strangers, for by doing that, some have even entertained angels without knowing it. I look forward to who you will invite this fall to worship, those you will invite to the picnic. Bring your special salad and desserts, more details to follow. But it's going to be a great time of letting this community know that Cold Spring Church has pineapple, and Christ is at the center of it all. Let us pray. We're bombarded with so many information points, news stories, so many things to think about. It can be overwhelming. Let's just pause for a moment and just celebrate the welcome arms that God has extended to you, to me. How God has made you feel welcome in His family. Jesus' open arms, who invite you to the table to celebrate the bread and the cup in a few moments.